Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
I want to get a TARDIS
Whovian
tattoo on my ass so that when you part my butt cheeks and the door is open, it's bigger on the inside.
Oh, no.
That's Lee.
Oh, no.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Right?
Oh.
Do you need to go far on Lee?
No, she doesn't.
She looks so comfortable.
Yeah,
she's
she does.
So chill. I'm actually quite comfy, too.
Yeah. So, your first time seeing Near Dark?
Yes.
Did you like it?
I did.
Cool.
What was your first impression?
It annoyed me how they turned him.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's breaking vampire rules. Other than that, I liked it. Bill Paxton's a nut job and has some fantastic one-liners.
Yeah.
He stole a lot of the show.
What was that?
Just like he did the last time he was with these actors.
Where he kicked your tonsils through your...
Yeah, kick your tonsils through something... your butthole or something. It was something really weird. When he was running at him at the semi.
Yeah.
He said something really bizarre. And I was just like, what the... What?
I don't know. The hijinks like,
logistically, that
those guys
even...
got up to during the recording, I thought, probably lent itself a lot to how bizarre it got on screen.
Oh, is that what happened?
Oh, God,
were
yeah.
they just real fucked up the whole time?
We'll talk about some of that, I'm sure.
There's some pretty interesting things that they did.
Between Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen, they pretty much lost their fucking minds making this movie. And right. just went totally bonkos. In, like, the best of ways.
That explains it.
Like, in the way we would if we were dressed up as a bunch of vampires and out in public.
Right.
Thank you. Slightly more difficult to pour a beer while holding a dog.
Yeah, they definitely said they made the conscious effort to trim out and discard most vampire lore because they didn't want the whole movie to be about garlic and crosses and mirror reflections and crossing streams and all that stuff. They just wanted it to be the very basics of vampire, which is you kill them in the sun, mm-hmm. you can burn them. And she also said that she needed to have a way to make sure that she could wrap up the film, like have everyone wind up the way they wind up.
Yeah.
Well, without, it was also ruining the... into a spaghetti western type of
sure.
movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all into... It's kind of unique in its own way.
That's what I totally loved
it
about
is.
This.
It really is.
Because yeah. you hadn't really seen, or at least I hadn't really seen any vampire movies at the time
mm-hmm.
that weren't, you know, kind of your traditional Dracula, you know, type, you know.
Yeah, because this was before like Bram Stoker's Dracula that
right,
yeah. brought that romanticism back
and definitely
and made that
before,
popular.
You know, the Tom Cruise Lestat.
The interviews and all that.
Far before Twinkly Vampires.
Yeah. What year was Dusk Till Dawn?
93.
Okay. Yeah, because Tarantino wasn't really a thing in the
yeah.
early 80s.
I just couldn't remember how long in between.
This film
this was 87.
Was released within days of Lost Boys.
Yeah. Okay.
However, started filming 8 months before Lost Boys. So it's funny that these films are so similar.
Yeah.
The Lost Boys in this one.
Yeah.
In the sense that you have a family of vampires and a family of humans, and one of the humans leaves his family kind of to become part of the other family.
This movie does not have the Frog Brothers. But...
No, that's true. So it's crazy the similarities, and I really noticed them this time around where I was like, wow, this is so similar in just story on paper.
Yeah.
To the Lost Boys.
But yeah, and the Lost Boys are good. I thoroughly enjoyed them, but I definitely like Near Dark better. It has a rawness. What do you say? Like cowboy? Like a cowboy feel?
It's a Western.
Yeah. It's like
a
Western cowboy feel. But I liked the rawness because it was like, hey, look, you know, man, you turn into a vampire, right? You don't, what are you going to do? All of a sudden you're immortal. You got no rules that you ever have to live by.
So you're going to go fuck shit up.
So what are you going to do for entertainment?
Oh, sure.
I hate the fact that you've got Superman. He's invulnerable, right?
Yeah.
Pew, 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 pew. Nothing affects him.
Yeah.
But then you have these immortals. You got like, you know, fucking Wolverine, or you have Deadpool, or you have vampires in this particular case.
Sure.
And they can they're, you know, immortal and they're invulnerable, basically, but they can get their shit fucked up. They can get into a bar fight. They can get their face ripped off and they can, you know, get hurt, but they always recover from it. And something about that slight vulnerability that lets you, you know, see them get screwed up.
Sure.
I think is super cool. I've always loved that. There's a movie with Kyle MacLachlan in it. I think it's called, is it The Hidden? Or is that a version of it? Anyway, he's an alien that comes down and he gets all shot up and he can die, but he transfers into another body.
Oh, okay.
But there's just something cool about that. No, he's not invulnerable like some of these other characters.
Yeah, invulnerability I think is the most boring thing. And that's why Superman is my least favorite superhero of all time, because he's cheesy. It's like, can he fly? Yeah, he can fly. Can he shoot lasers from his eyes? Sure, he can. Can he blow over a building with his breath? Yeah, of course. Can he see through stuff? Well, yeah. You know, the laser vision is also kind of like see-through vision. Can he turn back time by flying backwards around the world? Yeah, he totally. At some point, you're not interesting anymore.
I have a feeling that if he was real, though, he would be in big trouble nowadays, because he would be under harassment issues. With his X-ray vision.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Do you like pink? He'd be
totally pervy. He would be super perv. Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about it. These guys can be pervy.
But he might be super popular also, though, because he wears tights and a cape.
Might be.
That's true.
It's kind of in right now.
Yeah.
That was the thing that attracted me about this movie, is that these guys can be all of these things that we just described, but they still are bound by certain, like, physicalities.
Yeah.
You know? It's not without consequences, but it's something cool about knowing that it's not just what they're going to go do to somebody, because you know they're going to rip somebody's face off and they're going to pull their arms off and beat them over the head. But then it's also like, well, they can then be hurt. You know, their jaw might pop off and then they turn around and put the jaw back on. And, you know, anyway, it's just I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say, only that I love the fact that there's laws that they have to abide by that they try desperately to break all the time.
And I think it's good that they got rid of the laws that just kind of gum up the works.
Yeah.
The garlic, you know, whatever. That makes for funny situations, like in The Lost Boys. That was a hilarious scene where they're trying to put, you know, too much garlic on his spaghetti. And the cross, you know, that's always been an interesting one to me. And then, of course, you always wonder, like, well, is it just the cross or is it other religious emblems too?
One thing I liked about that whole crossing that they broke a little bit with Fright Night was when the kid brings out the cross and the vampire just laughs at him and says, man, you got to be a believer. I thought there was kind of an interesting spin too. On that.
Yeah,
too.
In which case, I do think it would be cool, you know, if you had, you know, a Jewish vampire and you pull out Star David and he's like, oh, crap. Yeah. So, like, I do think that would be cool. Whoa. to touch on all those things, but this movie didn't need it, man. This movie didn't even need fangs.
Well, I don't think it would work in this movie with the mood and the tone of the movie and the setting of the movie.
It was
movie.
Like Lee said, it was just about surviving the thing that it will mess work you in up, this movie. Which was sunlight in this case. And more than sunlight, it was just people coming after you, as people knowing about you.
Yeah.
That's the biggest vulnerability of a vampire. I think that's pretty cool.
And I love the fact that they took these people from not like soup, or at least I don't think so, like super long, like, oh, this is a Victorian era person that got turned back then. Although it might date back that old, but they were really like, you know, here's a punk ass kid.
Yeah.
And I think, wasn't he the oldest one?
Yeah, Homer, the little kid. That's my one drawback with this film. That's my one drawback
There's
with this movie.
There's one thing I hated about this movie. Yeah. It was that stupid kid.
But he didn't pull off what could have been an insanely awesome role in that. He is young. He's probably, what, like 10, 11 in the film? But he's supposed to be the oldest of them all. And we know that one of them goes at least to the Civil War.
Yeah.
And the one that goes to the Civil War turned another one, and then that one turned. So, yeah, I think he's probably the oldest, the Civil War one.
Well, you know, and the thing
is. And so Homer's older than that, and he doesn't play that at all. No, he still plays like a bratty little shit.
Well, and I think some part in the movie, he's kind of pissed off too, because he's like, you know, look at all this shit I can do. Look at me being immortal, stuck in a fucking 10-year-old chubby ass kid's body.
Which would be such an awesome thing to explore. Like they did an Interview with the Vampire, where the young girl, you know, is like, wow, I'm going to be like this forever. That's kind of awesome. Wait, it's probably not awesome. They could have really done a lot with that, or to have the quote unquote younger vampires making decisions that this little kid then says, hey, I've got more wisdom. Let me guide you along. He just acted like a kid.
He just so kind of stayed in mentality a little bit too. I like the fact that they did do that. They took the youngest vampire, but he was the oldest one. But then they had these other people from, like the Civil War or from like a Trailer Trash Mom, or it wasn't your typical like collage of vampires. Oh, we're clan this or we're, you know, royalty that. It was like,
totally,
here's a ragtag team of people that just came together and
yeah.
I pity the fool.
You know, really though, it's a lot like that. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like that. You've got this different cast of characters, each one with its own really weird, you know, Bill Paxton would be your Murdoch, you know, mm-hmm. and Lance Henriksen would totally be your Hannibal. Sure. And they run around in a van going place to place. Just instead of helping people, they, kill them and drink their blood.
Let's see what kind of chaos we can cause in the weirdest possible ways.
But no, I really enjoyed that they didn't feel the need to even say the word vampire.
Yeah. That's right. It's never used
in the entire movie at all. Movie.
Yeah.
It's just, what are you, and monster, and...
Yeah. And they say all the other things. Like, they say turning, mm-hmm. and, you know, you have to feed, mm-hmm. and you have to kill
and
a
they also, and I like that they didn't really have use of fangs.
Yeah, no fangs.
It wasn't one of those movies where they had, like, the cheese ball, like, switchblade fangs.
Fucking switchblade fangs. I hate those.
I'm just like, stop that.
Where they come in and out and all that and extend.
You're like,
yeah.
No, stop that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either.
It's dumb.
It's much cooler you just rip someone's throat out with your own damn teeth. Yeah, or even better, you have a knife.
Yeah.
Or if you're Bill Paxton, you have a spur.
Spurs.
Yeah, a little spurs.
Like a sharp. Yeah. They're like spurs.
Like pokey straw or something.
Exactly. I was going to say, they do have swirly straw. Creativity going. Like they do a lot of.
For sure.
This is the first time I saw a lot of these elements, though.
Which is not your typical vampire.
Right?
No, but which is also cool, though, because you got to defend yourself against normal people, and normal people have, you know, bullets as one of their mortally fatal things.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Near Dark.
Is this a Carpenter film?
No. This is Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, that shit. That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It has that feel.
It does.
It's the same, you know, era that some
of his
stuff.
In fact, I wrote some stuff down about her. I don't know why it was a Carpenter film. I just had this brief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is Dread, Fright, and Brew. We're talking about Near Dark. I love it. It's an un-vampire film.
Yeah, I fucking dig this film. Yeah. I've got so many freaking notes here. It's going to be – you guys are going to have to, like, reel me in because I got so much crap. I want to go through at least the first five or six actors and just call out the actors and promote what – They've been in, and what they've been doing. The major part of this film was the talent
they got to do this tiny little no budget, you know, a studio that was on its way out of business, which is why this was a box office crash, was because they didn't have anything behind it for advertising or anything. And then especially with Lost Boys coming out with Warner Brothers behind it. What they were able to do, I think, lends itself entirely to the actors that were in it. Well, and Catherine Bigelow, who made some great choices.
I hear beer being poured.
Yeah, we have our pairing.
That can be yours, Aaron, because I think Lee's grabbing.
Okay. I'll bring a mug. I don't always get a chance to pull out a mug that has anything to do with what we're talking about.
Ooh.
But this one here, I do.
Oh.
And those in the know might know why that has something to do with the movie that we're talking about.
That's quite the mug. How do you have all these and we've never seen them? Like, we've been to your place, we hang out.
Well, I mean, you haven't seen my closets of,
I guess that's true.
Sci-fi and
there was that one time, but
I didn't know what's in his closet.
I came out of the closet so that you could see what's in it. Juan, you enjoyed it.
So tell
it.
Us about your mug. This is rad.
Well, that's Tom Cruise, by the way. He's still in there.
Fucking hell. So this was a mug. I'm a huge James Cameron fan and a huge Aliens fan. This particular mug I have right now is a egg sack, or an egg, whatever you want to call it, from the movie Aliens, and it has a face hugger surrounding it and gripping it over the sides. And then his little egg fingers, or alien fingers, spider fingers, are dipping down into the mug as well.
Dude, that's awesome.
He's fingering your beer. He's going
to drink all your beers before you get to it.
Spit it out. Yeah, I mean, my God, I could go on and on and on about the movie Aliens and about the culture of the aliens and the creatures and the evolutions of them. But I thought this one here, I didn't even occur to me until today. I was like, what mug am I going to bring? And I was like, well, holy fuck. We've got Catherine Bigelow, who is married to James Cameron, who James Cameron ended up suggesting many of the actors for her movie that he had worked with in the past, like Lance Hendrickson and Bill Paxton and Jenny Goldstein, who were all in Aliens, which was an incredible movie. And it's just such a beautiful ensemble of actors that have came together for Near Dark that happen to have this tie-in. So I thought, well, I'll
spray my... I thought my microphone smelled weird, but it was my beer. So that was me sniffing my microphone. In case everyone hears that.
I was like, what the fuck am I saying wrong here? What a face.
No, there was something... Yeah, okay. I'm better. I'm back.
All right.
Asshole.
Yeah, it happens.
So anyway, so I was like, well, this has got to be perfect. It's subtle.
That's an awesome
It's like, here's the actors from Aliens that are doing an incredible vampire movie, you know, and they sell it. So cheers.
Cheers.
What are we drinking?
This is Clown Shoes Undead Party Crasher, and it has a delightful label of various monsters attacking, let's see, what is it? Oh, it's some sort of, like, business convention. It's, Welcome Trademark Attorneys.
Yes.
There's a banner on the little wall.
Yeah, there's a backstory behind this label. And first off, we're doing Undead Party Crasher, which is a movie that I had thought of doing with Near Dark.
Way back.
Since before we've been recording. Yeah. I think it's just – and it all comes down to the bar scene.
Yeah. That we'll talk about, I'm sure, in great
detail. But the idea behind this photo – and why you have all these traditional monsters and things attacking this guy was the original beer.
That's super good.
Do you remember what the original name of this beer was?
It's like Vampire or something.
I think it was Vampire Slayer. Vampire Slayer was the name of it. And they were sued, or were going to be sued. I think they were given
a threat of suing.
Yeah, by Vampire Winery. So they changed the name to Undead Party Crasher, and came out with this awesome label of a bunch of undead things taking out some trademark attorneys.
Which I think is so much pretty sweet. Better than, I mean, Undead Party Crasher.
I think it's a lot so more fun. Much better. Yeah, to be quite honest.
Delightfully passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And probably a good thing because it would have cost them nearly $40,000 or $400,000 apparently to go through this lawsuit thing.
That's so much better just to change the name, make a fun label, which, of course, Clown Shoes is known for.
Yeah. Well, and Clown Shoes is also fantastic. Used to having to change their labels and deal with crap.
They catch a lot of flack.
They get a lot of flack. For
the
labels.
I'm also glad they changed the name because had they left the beer Vampire Slayer, it is quite possible we would have watched that total shit fest Van Helsing. And that would make me really sad. No, we probably wouldn't have.
Here's a...
It has Kate Beckinsale in it, though.
It totally does, but that's...
So there's one shining moment still not in
there. The real one or the poor man?
Still not enough.
Oh,
no, it's the real one.
Rana Mitra is still worthy of standing up and taking
She's all right, but
she's no Kate Beckinsale.
She is
I'm
the
sorry.
Poor man's Kate Beckinsale.
Whatever, I challenge you to go watch Hollow Man right now and see the nude scene. You will Hollow take man? Kate Beckinsale and you'll set her aside.
Let's break.
Oh, the remake or
no the one with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah.
And your lips are still flapping about how she's subpar to Kate Beckinsale?
Yes. You do not understand the ridiculousness with Juan and Kate Beckinsale.
Yep. They do things different in your country, don't they?
Apparently so.
Fun fact, by the way, as we were looking up this Party Crasher thing, they say that in a vengeful genius, they actually decided to go ahead and release the same recipe and everything, but you actually brew it with holy water and as some sort of...
I have heard that.
Yeah.
That's an addition.
Little... Shit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which bless the water. Is just that much more awesome.
Right, exactly.
And we touched on it a little bit, but Clown Shoes, they have that irreverent, like a little bit too far, wherever that line is, you know, they're the first to cross it. And that's been something that I've really admired about them since I first discovered them as a brewery, and also something like you mentioned has gotten them in a lot of trouble. Some of their labels pushed things a little too far. They got in trouble from some
North Carolina,
some women rights advocates and things. And
yeah. Well, and a lot of their labels are super cartoony. Mm-hmm. And there's some states on the East Coast that they're not even allowed to have those labels. They have to have just a blank label with the name.
Yes.
Because if you have a cartoony label, they feel that you're marketing to kids.
Like Joe Camel cigarettes.
All yeah, you stuff. Can't do that because yeah. the tobacco company has that mm-hmm. in their back right? pocket. That's their thing.
But see, what makes that so funny, too, is the way they handled that, where they could have done what they did here and mm-hmm. just changed the label. And that would have been kind of funny. Or they can do what they did, which is pretty much put just a generic label on it with a generic title and said, this label has been replaced with this due to, and they totally call out yeah. that hypocrisy. And all of these things are just making me like Clown Shoes a little bit more. When we first recorded our episode, which shall not be named and may someday be aired. When we recorded that episode, we kind of had all our notes on Clown Shoes as a brewery and kind of what we liked about them and what we thought about them and everything. And that was, almost a year ago. Well, I guess.
No, it wasn't.
No, I'm thinking of when I got going. It was six months ago.
Yeah
about 6 months ago. In that time, Clown Shoes was bought out.
Oh, that's right. Harpoon.
And I kind of wondered how that was would affect them. So I've been keeping an eye on that. Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah. Harpoon picked them up. So they started as a brewery in 2009. Clown Shoes did. And before that, they started as just making a single beer at Ipswich Brewing in Massachusetts.
Because there were homebrewers that slowly turned pro. And
he went in there and made a beer with them. And they thought it was super cool. And so they decided, hey, well, we'll make this beer with you all the time. And I forget which one it was. It was a dark IPA I think it was a black IPA. And so they made that beer with them for a while and then started going, well, you know, we can kind of do our own thing. But they didn't have a production facility or any of that. They just had brewers and ideas and recipes. So they worked with Ipswich Brewing for quite some time as just basically contracting their recipes. Mm-hmm. And they kept complete control. We thought that was cool. So I was a little worried when we found out they just got fully picked up by Harpoon. But the more I looked into Harpoon, the more I thought it's actually better for Clown Shoes, because Harpoon is employee-owned and operated, which is super awesome. Every single person that was in any way on the Clown Shoes team got to move to Harpoon's team and become employee owners buy into that and get the proceeds back from that, which is cool. Instead of paying someone else to make your beer, you're now paying yourself to make your beer, which is pretty rad. And so I think that's going to be a really good move. Also, Harpoon is, they're just so steeped in Massachusetts beer. They were actually issued, I read a factoid on this, way, way back in the 80s, I think it was. They were issued Brewer's Permit 001 in Massachusetts.
Seriously?
Because they were first brewer to apply for a brewing permit under the new looser laws that allowed it. And they were the first one to have one of those permits in over 25 years in Massachusetts to brew commercially.
Awesome.
So, I mean, these guys are ground floor guys and they've been around that long and they haven't sold out to someone bigger.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. So.
No, I think it's going to be a smart pairing. I think it's, you know, people are so leery of buyouts, but I feel like this is kind of more of like how Green Flash picked up Alpine.
Yeah.
It's basically a big brother picking up a little brother to help them out. It improves their production. It improves their distribution.
Totally.
And all of those kinds of things, but without destroying the other brand.
Yeah.
Well, so and hopefully they'll carry over some of their uniqueness, because in the episode that shall not be named, we went into some really cool, like, factoids and back history of Clown Shoes that
their name was so funny that there was a contest to name a beer and they entered the name Clown Shoes, and when it was rejected they thought, well, that's too cool of a name not to use, love it. And it became the name when they began to make beer. So I mean there's a lot of really fun history in them for sure, and now I'm hoping there's a lot of fun history for them in the future, because it seemed like they had kind of reached the level they were going to reach. And I was amazed that even just contract brewing that way and having someone else make their beers, put their labels on bottles, that they still managed to be in 28 states and 5 different countries.
Yeah.
Which is absurd and shows a good business head, if not on them, then on Ipswich when they were making it.
Yeah. Not bad for, what, 7-8 years?
Yeah. I mean, they started distributing outside of Massachusetts in 2011, so that was 2 years after they started doing beer. I'm just
impressed that you can say Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
That's...
I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Massachusetts. Yeah, I can't.
Is Massachusetts a hard word for you?
Yeah,
Massachusetts.
Well, much like anthology.
Massive two shits.
Can be a hard word for some
massive
people.
Massive two shits. Is that
so we used to say when we were kids in school, and we'd have to say it. When we were kids, we'd all call it massive two shits and get in trouble at school.
Ladies and gentlemen, special guest star, Juan Montalbanco.
That's awesome.
Teachers did not like that.
For your teachers.
Yeah. Well, Harpoon is one of the top 20 biggest craft brewers in the U.S., which is crazy that they're still employee-owned, and they're in the top 20. Massachusetts, or Massive Two Shits, named them one of the top charitable contributors. They also won a Green Business Award. And the Boston Globe in Massive Two Shits named them one of the best places in Massive Two Shits to work. I really like saying it your way.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch
it's
that.
It's more natural, too.
Massachusetts.
Look what you did. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
This is your fault.
Hey, what does it say? It takes a village.
This is true.
It takes a village.
But what if the entire village is the idiots?
I was going to say.
Village of idiots.
I was going to say, yeah.
I would rule the
Dread,
idiots.
Frightened, Blue. So fuck, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Dread, Frightened, Boo.
Jesus.
Dread, Frightened, Boo.
No more primary energy for you.
Dread, Frightened, Boo.
Dread.
We have logo no, glassware, so you can just read it off of this.
Okay, and there he goes like a teleprompter. Dread, Frightened, Brew, a village of idiots.
DFB,
I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know that I should be on the same level as you.
Well, you're clearly going to be the matriarch that runs it.
I'm thinking about starting a Facebook group beyond our Facebook page. And so, hey, this is breaking news right here. This is first announcement.
Right.
Even apparently to you guys. where it can be more interactive and people that listen to our podcast can get on there and we can all post just ridiculous, dorky things like we talk about.
Oh, I love it.
And
vetted.
I think it's going to be the Dread, Fright, and Brooligans.
Oh, nice. That's fair.
We'll be our little community. That's clever. So look for that.
At one point, me and Aaron wanted to get business cards made.
Oh, yes.
Had our names and just said professional idiots right underneath the the names. Yep.
All right.
And we were just too – yeah, that's what happened.
Are too wild and crazy idiots.
So we've talked a lot about this brewery. Let's talk about this beer because it's super, super good.
I'm really glad that we picked this beer because originally I was thinking –
because
it's not an IPA. No, I found a couple – like What Rough Beast. I want to find an excuse to bring back What Rough Beast.
Oh, I've got it.
Numerous times because I fucking love that beer.
Got a great idea for
it. But I'm glad that we picked this one. Obviously, it makes sense. It's a stout. You're a vampire. You're kind of numb to the world. You're immortal. What's going to, you know, give you a
vibe? Also, it's big and beastly and dark.
It's big and beastly and dark, right? Mm-hmm. It's got something most people, you know. But I thought, well, naturally, no, you'd want a red ale, right? Vampires, blood. I'm like, no, that's too cliche. And there's other movies out there that a red ale would be better for.
Yeah, plus you're drinking enough blood. You don't need the rest of
that. Yeah, I think this is right on.
Yeah, it's – yeah, look at that. Dark malts, holy water, and malt smoked locally with hickory and ash. That is fantastic.
That in itself, I'm surprised they don't have the Vatican breathing down their throat.
I don't think there's a trademark on holy water.
There's not.
No.
Yeah.
When does the church need anything legal to do whatever it is they want to do?
Oh, well, they just buy the crown.
Yes. Yes, they do.
That's how they used to do it.
But anyway, so this is a big old, this is an American Imperial Stout. It's 10.5% alcohol. So
that's a good way to start.
It's warm in the winter.
It's extremely smooth and creamy. Really,
you
really
get
good.
A little bit of those smoked malts on the back end.
For sure.
But not over the top. Like, it's not a full-on smoked beer, but you get kind of that smoky, roasty. But that's a good thing in a stout.
Yeah. There's a line in Near Dark that May, the first vampire that we meet, says to Caleb when he's still human and she's trying to seduce him into her side of things. And she says that the night is so bright. It's almost blinding or something to that effect. Yeah. And I get that vibe with this beer also, is that it's super dark. It looks like it's going to be just super heavy and boozy. And then you read the 10% or 10.5%, but it's lively and fun. It's got a great mouthfeel, and that smoke stuff gives it a nice little spike and a good
That's tang. What I'm really enjoying in a lot of these dark beers that we've tried is that, yeah, we've had some really thick ones, some very heavy ones, but we found a surprisingly amount of like some more Cascadian ales or dark ales that are crisp even. Sinister, for instance.
Yeah, Sinister Black.
Black, dark, delicious, light and crisp and refreshing. Not at all what you'd expect. This has similar qualities.
This one's nice because it's a big, beasty stout, and you get all those roasty characters without it being aggressively hot from the alcohol, without it being overly astringent from being too roasty. It's a really nice, approachable stout for how beasty it is.
And there's a good hop character in there that blends into that, like, roasty
it's flavor. Really well it's really well-balanced.
Yeah. It's really, really nice.
I'm going to have to go get the other bottle. My cup
runs dry. Yeah, we're going to have to fill up these glasses again. I'm glad we did decide to buy another bottle of this because that's super, super good. So, Catherine Bigelow directed Near Dark. We've talked about her a little bit as we got going on this thing. Mm-hmm. But this was her first directorial debut.
Damn.
For a feature film, at least.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And she had this idea to make this. Western that she wanted to make, and the companies that she was talking to and other people in the biz basically were saying, yeah, no, a Western alone isn't gonna do anything right now. It's not gonna sell. It's not gonna make us any money back.
Thank you.
But what was hot was horror films. They were in their heyday. I mean, all the way through the 80s and even into, well, by the early 90s, it was kind of crashing in on itself. But all the way through the 80s, horror films were the gold. You could make one for nothing and, you know, make your money back tenfold.
Yes, because you can do pretty some easy. Pretty cheap, cheesy practical effects.
Exactly.
And minimal sets.
So they say, make us a horror movie. And she goes, well, it's still going to be a Western. And that, I guess, is where this whole vibe of setting this in the Midwest.
And are they in the Midwest or are they in the South?
It's supposed to be in the Midwest. West. This is okay. Bible Belt kind of stuff. And I'm sure they say.
Well, when you're supposed to take place, that bus trip back home, he was.
At one point, the dad was in
that Kansas or something? Or maybe somewhere in Texas.
Probably.
Yeah.
It feels very Oklahoma-ish.
Some of Kansas. The one-liners and some of the weird comments and things seemed very, like, deep.
I think a lot of that is probably just Hollywood not fully comprehending how to cast
the Bible Belt,
or just cowboys.
Yeah, true.
I think a lot of America thinks cowboys and hicks are kind of the same thing, and that's definitely kind of two different vibes.
Ha! The best scene. This is my favorite. Got it watching in the background.
This is the undead party crash.
Undead party crash right here. This is a beautiful scene where they walk into this bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're obviously hooligans and all the locals will look at them like, what the fuck? And the fun that they have here momentarily is fucking incredible.
Well, and
Bill Paxton steals the scene here, man.
I think every scene.
Bill what?
Bill Paxton.
Bill Pac-Man.
Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton.
Bill Two Shits.
Only if they're massive.
I'm glad that you brought up Catherine Bigelow right away because I was looking some stuff up on her and I had no idea who she was. So, and I want to take a minute to, and I don't know, you know, we can do this throughout or all at once, but I want to take a minute to actually just talk a little bit about the cast.
Sure.
Because these guys are kind of icons. They've got a lot that they've done that have brought, you know, a lot of different genres together.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so is she.
Yeah.
And she made Point Freaking Break.
Yep. She did Hurt Locker.
For me.
The as well. Good. Yeah, and she did the Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker's amazing.
But yeah, Point Break, the original
Zero Dark
Point Break.
30, I think is a fantastically crafted film. I've watched that film probably five or six times now. I absolutely love that movie. And one of my favorite science fiction films that doesn't get a lot of play and a lot of talk, and I think it's out of print, which is probably why, Strange Days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with
Well, and she's got a lot of accolades. She's got a lot of firsts. She's like won the Directors Guild of America Award for directing Hurt Locker.
Yeah,
she was also became the first woman in Oscar history to win the Best Director Award.
I did not know that. That's freaking cool.
Yeah, she did.
I knew she won an Oscar. I had no idea she was the first woman.
She was the first woman, and that was presented to her by Barbara Streisand.
That's unfortunate.
Only woman to ever won the Golden Globe for Best Director. So there was that, you know, that female power in the man ruled. You know, Hollywood.
The shit out of this
movie. I'm telling you, man, I was all about this. I fucking love this movie. I wanted to know a little bit more deeper about it for the podcast.
Definitely.
She's also the first woman to win a BAFTA award for Best Director. So she's got, not just in 1987, a one-shot wonder. She went on to be a powerhouse. And I suppose being married to James Cameron doesn't hurt, but by her own
accord, she had her chops.
She's
before.
Had her chops. Yeah.
And,
the man directed one of the most heartwarming, sad movies in the entire world, Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Oh, my God.
Dude, it is a sad movie.
You've got to get over Terminator 2. Oh, it is. It's the only movie I've ever seen.
When Arnold thumbs up in the lava, my heart broke.
I tear up.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. In fact, right now I'm going to need a moment.
That's absurd.
Oh.
You guys are absurd.
Dude, he cannot self-terminate.
Nope. And the trifecta here, you've got Lance Hendrickson, Bill Paxton, Jeanine Goldstein, which all starred in Aliens. I mean, my God, let's just start with Lance Hendrickson real quick. Of course, he was in the franchise films. He later became the face of...
also Frank Black.
Waylon from the is it Waylon
from Millennium.
In the Alien franchise?
Well, yeah, the corporate starts as Bishop,
who
was based on
Did you know that he was originally envisioned as the T-800 in Terminator?
There were several people that were going to do that, and I'm glad that none of them, but Arnold did it.
Yeah,
he's also in Pumpkinhead.
Yep, Pumpkinhead, Quick and the Dead. He actually was written in for the creature in Jeepers Creepers, but turned it down.
Also wise, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Now, I remember that third one was a winner.
Yeah. And he's got a huge...
I think he's better as himself. Yep. I don't want to see him in a creature makeup or some kind of costume.
And then, of course, your favorite, Millennium.
Yeah, that is actually right up on my top favorite television
show. And he just has a shit ton of voice work, too. Like really popular stuff, Disney's Tarzan, Brainiac in the animated series of Superman and Transformers, you know, a lot of cool shit.
Legendary. I mean, some people get legendary in a genre, but to be legendary in multiple genres is incredible. But to be a sci-fi staple and a horror staple, it's pretty awesome, and I can't think of a lot of people that double that up.
No, and a lot of these actors do because, you know, you see them early on in these early movies like Near Dark, and you don't know at the time, but then they go on to produce and be involved in incredible projects like Bill Paxton, you know, from Weird Science, sort of starting off as Weird Science as Chet.
Oh, I forgot he was in that.
Yes, Weird Science, baby.
Oh, man.
Of course, he was in Terminator as the punk at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's in Tombstone, major character in Tombstone.
Oh yeah.
Let's go back to your Terminator thing for a moment. So, and you may have this in your copious notes over there, but in this film, the scene that we were just getting excited about in this bar scene, there is a biker who Bill Paxton in Terminator is the guy giving Arnold a bad time when Arnold's trying to get his clothes.
Right. Yeah. Wash day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And basically gets, you know, taught the lesson by the Terminator. The biker in the bar that Bill Paxton kind of attacks and tussles with in this film was the guy in Terminator 2 who was a biker that Arnold gave a bad time to get his clothes. So I thought it was funny that Arnold's two victims from those two films in this movie have a little row.
Yeah, that's what's so cool because Cameron does. He pulls from talent he works with and he loves. Sure. And he's like, let's make some magic in all these different areas that we're going to touch.
Well, Bill Paxton's also in one of my favorite, what some people call horror movie or kind of same genre, that movie, Frailty. Which, for me, I love that movie.
It's fantastic.
I love it.
It's the horror equivalent to me of like a Seven.
Yeah.
Kind of a movie. Or like a Usual Suspects kind of film. Like one of those just cerebral, twisty, like it's the horror film equivalent.
Yeah.
Of
that. Well, you know, and I think with Bill Paxton, a lot of people know his name, but I don't know, maybe a lot of people don't know his work, but when you stop and think about it, it's impressive.
I think a lot of people know Aliens and they know Twister.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Twister. Everyone knows Twister.
Apollo 13.
I've never actually seen that.
Oh, God, dude. That is such a good movie.
I'm sure it is.
He's one of those so people dry, that if you saw not. Him on the screen, then you'd be like, that's the guy from this, even if you aren't familiar with him, because he's in so much stuff.
One of the cool things that I found out about Bill Paxton I didn't know about is that he died too.
All the storm chasers did like a little like tribute to him.
Yeah.
So you could see it from like this.
Because all their vehicles, vehicles have tracking on them, which helps them chase storms and also
they did something. Know how it's
They coordinated themselves to drive their vehicles into different parts of the country that when it would show up on an overhead like satellite map, when you saw the pinpoints of their vehicles, it basically spelled out a tribute Bill Paxton, like that on a really cool. ginormous scale.
So yeah, because he had awesome. I mean, he covered a huge range in the business and beyond. Yeah.
Oh, he was also in True Lies.
True.
As the car salesman.
Yep.
Shit, I forgot he was in that.
He actually formed a new wave musical band called Martini Ranch back in 1982.
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually produced a full-length album. Yeah. Yeah. Devo, one of the members of Devo, actually produced the album. And James Cameron, it was his first video single that James Cameron directed or produced.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine Bigelow also produced a music video for one of my favorite bands, New Order, which featured Bill Paxton in that video.
Hell yeah.
I mean, pretty much all these people we're talking about is just one degree of everybody.
Yeah. It literally is.
Because they followed each other around for a while. And that was one of the reasons that James Cameron suggested them to Catherine Bigelow, because they weren't husband and wife at that time, but, you know, they were acquainted, or I mean, I'm not sure what their status was, but he knew what project she was working on, that she needed a family of vampires. And he said, well, then you want a family, a group of actors that has already existed as a team, mm-hmm. so that it will have that playing off of each other and that comfortableness. So gosh, did it work. And apparently it continued after.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm just sitting here looking at, and I had to stop myself because most of these actors have, just a body of work. Mm-hmm. Even the kid, Joshua Miller, he actually was in Halloween 3, apparently. He was also in The Greatest American Hero.
All right, well.
Yeah, so,
it's an all right show. Yeah. I'm sure he was annoying in that too, though, because he's super annoying. I hate to jump on the annoying kid bandwagon, especially after we defended like the Babadook and all that kind of thing.
Well, but you even hated the kid in Babadook. No, but this –
okay, so –
when we first watched it, I did. Yeah. And then the Babadook kid had a purpose. Now. Yes, exactly. And it's actually
this
only
this kid is just stupid and annoying.
Well, and the kid in the Babadook, his –
how
his
do you really feel?
Right.
That was mild compared to how I really feel.
That Babadook kid, his irritating and off-putting personality is a product of his acting ability.
Yeah, it's intentional.
Being coached this kid's just a shitty to actor. Acting that. Yeah, this kid was just – I hated him. Hated him.
Stupid.
Can't stand him. And he doesn't fit the part. He's the only part of this movie that goes a little against the grain for me. Yeah. But he catches on fire and explodes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
Oops, spoiler alert. Oops.
Doesn't matter. I just want everyone to know that if they start watching this and they're like, oh, yeah, seriously, this kid is annoying as shit. He catches on fire and explodes.
I did get really.
At the end, watch the whole movie.
I got really excited.
Yeah, it's the best part.
That was my favorite.
You know what?
The cornball effects that are going on while he's lighting on fire.
That was great effects.
I know. You settled down. It
was absolutely fantastic, great overlaid fire.
Were you even born then?
I was born in 1987, actually.
Yeah. Well, you're 30 years old now, so you should be appreciating some of that.
How old are you?
38.
Oh, yeah? Uh-huh.
I thought you were 39 now. I don't know.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I'm 39 now. According to Just for Men.
actually, that line that Lance Henriksen uses in this as his character, Jesse, where Caleb asks him, just how old are you? And he says, I fought from the South. And Caleb says, the South? And he goes, we lost. And that gives you your idea that he's from the Civil War. I think they got that line from you. Is that right?
Well,
it was a quote.
James, Jesus Christ. We're going to edit this part out.
Oh, no, we're not. This is good.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Catherine Bigelow
came to me, asked for some advice, some historical advice. Yeah. I said, well, hey, this is what we used to say back in 1802. And blah, blah, blah.
All right.
We'll call them Camelot.
That's what I
thought. Camelot.
Not Camel Toe, Lee. Camelot.
Oh, my God. Now, let's talk about an actor that I know is going to light up Juan over here and myself that isn't on your list of amazing acting talent, my friend.
You've been looking at my list?
I'm looking though. At your list. Yeah, Mr. Tim Thomerson.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Because Mr. Tim Thomerson is a staple of my horror movie watching childhood and walking those video aisles and picking up such classics as Trancers and Trancers 2, in yeah. which he plays the character Jack Death.
That's fucking awesome.
And Trancers. It's so another. Good. Yeah. So he's like a time traveling cop that's out to get this super bad guy psychic who can like turn people into like mind controlled zombies. And he's from the future, but they come back to like 1980s LA or and something, it's and he's hunting them all around.
In settings that of the 80 movies were filmed in because they didn't afford the budget, which was pretty much like desert kind of esque landscapes to portray, sort of apocalyptic, environments. Because, you couldn't afford huge, big sets like you can now in CG and all that stuff. Cherry 2000 was Iron another Eagle. Version of it.
Iron Eagle.
Well, Cherry 2000, Tim Thomerson was in that.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. And Iron Eagle with Louis Gossett Jr. he was in. And also Dollman. He is Dollman. And there was cyborg kind of sci-fi movie that I really liked back in the day when there wasn't a lot of like cyberpunk or cyborg or that kind of future robot stuff that you could get. Nemesis. That he was in that was also super good. Cool. And going back a couple episodes to our Christmas episode where you mention Evil Bong. Evil Bong, it turns out, stars Tim Thomerson as his character, Jack Death.
That's amazing. Watching them?
Well, so are the rest of these. We're talking – these are Full Moon Video quality stuff, which if you're a horror fan, you've been around for a little while, you know Full Moon.
Yep.
And you know Puppet Master. It's a classy Troma production. So where Troma would just aim for the gutter, they aim a lot higher.
They just fall in the gutter.
They don't even really fall in the gutter. They have about as much resources behind them as Troma does. So it just never really, made it as high as they aimed. But here's my best Tim Thomerson piece. He is currently in post-production, just found this out today, on a film called Bring Me the Head of Lance Henriksen, in which Tim Thomerson plays himself in modern time right now, and he's like, man, I don't get acting roles anymore, and I got to get back in the biz. I got to go talk to my old buddy Lance, who has never fallen out of favor, and everybody loves him, and see what's going on there, and what he discovers is a big surprise of dark secrets or something along these lines. And it's called Bring Me the Head of Lance Henriksen, and I cannot tell you how much I'm excited about this.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
Shit.
Yeah. Holy shit.
So this is going to be fantastic. But
yeah, I would have brought up Tim. Yeah, but I mean, there's so many notes I could have took. I just said I better just stick to the main characters.
Yeah,
but,
Tim. Is, I'll go for the Tim. Yeah,
you bring in the special ones.
I'll bring Dollman.
Yeah. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention Jeanette Goldstein. Most famous character. She hasn't done a lot of, I guess, popular or well-known work. But
I was going to say, she's not a name that people probably recognize.
But when you bring Vasquez
to
the table, everybody knows who the Vasquez is, and she has never been mistaken for a woman.
Nope.
It should be noted.
Pretty sure she had a bigger dick than every one of those guys on that show.
Yep. Yep.
But then we got Adrian Pazdar? God damn it, I can't pronounce that.
I think it's Pazdar. Pazdar, yeah.
I mean, he was in Top Gun. That was his first role.
He's our main guy, Caleb.
He's our main guy.
He's our cowboy that starts mortal and gets turned in this film. Yeah. And I don't remember him from Top Gun. And I spent the entire time watching this film.
Who the hell is he in Top Gun?
Wondering who the heck he remind or where I knew
him
from.
Minor role, but he got he impressed.
No, but who? I've watched Top Gun.
Tony Scott, and he ended up getting a small role.
He's one of the pilots, because when I saw it on IMDb, he's got a code name for his character name.
If I knew his code name, I'd probably know who.
Chipper was his. See, it didn't mean anything to me either.
He probably had minimal screen time.
Heroes
is where everybody knows it from.
That's where he's from.
Nathan Petrelli. His Heroes, the senator.
I never watched Heroes.
It was good until the writer's strike got in the way and fucked everything up.
Everybody was super excited about it. So
I own all the seasons, and I've just ever watched the first one.
It has that girl I can't stand. so I won't watch it.
Hayden, what? Hayden Panettone?
Yeah, exactly. Cannot. I won't watch anything with her. She drives me nuts.
Panettone. It's an
Italian I forget the movie that she's in, but you get a really good
it's
side boob.
With Dirty Raisins inside.
I don't even want to see her side boob. She doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry.
No, wash your mouth out with some clown shoes, holy water.
She's no Blake Lively, I'll tell you that much.
But Adrian is married to...
You're welcome for making him watch that movie.
Natalie Maines from the Dixie Chicks. Just a little fun fact there.
Who is married to her?
Adrian Pazdar.
Oh. Yeah. All right. I don't know who that is. The
Dixie Chicks?
I know who they are. It's one of the
chicks that are Dixie.
Couldn't pick them out of the lineup. Yeah. don't know.
Laws in same country.
And then real quick, Jenny Wright as May, the other... Because that's the love interest there, you know.
Yeah.
Adrian Caleb and May as the young vampire that turns this hick. That to me,
Hayseed,
was the boring part of the story.
Yeah,
I didn't get behind it at all. I don't know why. Maybe I just loved the...
It's because they were trying to make the freaking vampire movie or...
Trying to make it meaningful or something. I don't know. I just like the violence in that one.
I didn't mind it at all.
I like it. And the reason I like it is because... I see her character not as the other vampires because she is the youngest as far as being turned.
Yeah.
She's the most recent turn.
She still has the empathy.
Touch of her humanity
left.
So,
yeah, she's in contact with the things that made her human.
Yeah.
But she also is super excited about living forever.
Yeah.
And
she wants a partner in crime.
And we can get into a little of this when we start talking about how this film goes. But, you know, she wants someone to share that excitement with. And I think she's looking forward to this huge, long time she's going to be alive. And she's like, yeah, you know, there is this little boy who's ancient. But then Lance Henriksen, Jesse, has Jeanette Goldstein's Diamondback. And they're a couple. So they've got each other. There's no way she's going for... Severin, Bill Paxton's character, because he's just wackadoo.
He's a fucking
he's a maniac.
He's like to Near Dark is what who played the Kurgan in Highlander?
Oh, I don't
Clancy
remember,
Brown.
I don't remember his name. Okay,
Paxton in this movie to the vampire is what Clancy Brown was to the Kurgan.
That's totally correct. Yeah. Someone who has decided just to use their immortal status for nothing but shits and giggles.
Right.
And to be a pain in everyone's ass. Yeah. You know, watch the world burn kind of a mentality. And Bill Paxton is that with just a little more class.
He's almost like the Hannibal Lecter of it. You know?
Yeah.
He's got some...
For sure. So I saw this thing between May and...
Caleb,
thank you. As kind of, you know, she goes, well, I don't want to go through this entire experience of running around and painting the windows of our car black and putting tinfoil up in the hotel and all that without somebody who's kind of like me and
around that same age.
I can share it with. Yeah. You know. And so when they meet, she's a little standoffish, but she also was throwing the bait out there. So when they meet, she's, you know, licking her ice cream cone out on the sidewalk, and she's kind of sultry, and she's obviously attracting the attention of any guys that are around. And then you can see her kind of feel this guy out and play kind of coy and play kind of hard to get. And he keeps, of course, going for it because the bait's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can kind of see her going, oh, hey, I kind of do like this guy.
And I get the feeling that he, the character that they portray him as, is he's like kind of tired of the Bodunk town, and he's looking for a little something outside of the realm.
Totally.
It's
cool that we can pick up on that without them telling us that, because many movies would just ham-fist that and be like, a scene with him going, I got to get out of this fucking
one of these
two-stoplight shithole, you know, kind of thing.
One-horse town.
There's a lot of horses in this town.
Yeah.
But nothing like that is necessary because, like you said, you just kind of get that feeling. So that was kind of cool. But no, I did like their relationship. I like the fact that she was still juvenile and emotional the way a human girl of her age would be.
Mm-hmm.
And that explained a lot of her decision making. Whereas the other ones were all very much more worldly and had been around and had some wisdom and all that kind of thing. So they wanted nothing to do with her shenanigans at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and she's quite a good actress, too. I mean, she has some credits, too. She was in The World According to Garp. She was in St. Elmo's Fire.
Mm-hmm.
She did a little stint in Pink Floyd, The Wall. Young Guns 2, The Lawnmower Man. She has some horror in there, too.
And then at some point just disappeared.
Yeah, and then done. Yeah.
Disappeared so much so that there's a really cool special feature. Actually, I was just watching it with Deanne a little bit earlier today that has the Adrian Pazdar guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy from Heroes, who is our Caleb in this, he's talking about her and how much fun it was to work with her and how, you know, kind of sexy and sultry she was and how she was a great actress and all this kind of stuff. And man, I swear if he wasn't a little bit serious in this, but he kind of looks at the camera and he actually, you know, says something to her like, you know, Jenny, I don't know where you are, but if you're out there, it's time. I want to hang out. I want to get caught up. I want to, and you can tell she made an impact on this guy that's still around to this day.
When I was looking at the filmography, I thought, oh no, did she die?
Yeah, no, apparently she just checked,
but she didn't.
Yeah. She just checked out. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't do any research to. I'm sure someone has found her and has her whole story on the interwebs, but I don't know.
Lee will figure it out.
Well, that takes care of one page of my notes, guys. I've got like six more.
Yeah. On to volume two.
Let's get going.
So that's how our movie opens, though, is these two meeting for the first time. And they hang out a little bit. He decides to give her a ride home to her family, as she keeps saying. Mm-hmm. And he tries to guess, like, oh, is it your dad? Is it your dad? She never really says, because, of course, it's not. It's this group of vampires that she's with. But she gets a little overzealous and a little caught up in his charms. And, you know, this beautiful night, and she gives him a nibble, which in this film is enough to turn you.
Yeah, it's just a little kiss, but she nips him just a touch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess now's a good time as any, but in this film, vampirism is passed a little bit outside of, like Grace was saying at the very beginning, of the traditional role of, like, you have to ingest have my blood.
Well, she's also in a hurry, too, like though. She's wanting to get back to her family, if you notice, because the sun's coming up. Yeah. And so she's like, I need to get back, you know?
Well, I thought that was a really cool vehicle because she just runs off and then he's like, oh, well, fuck, whatever.
Yeah.
And he tries to get in his car and it doesn't start. So he walks home and then the sun comes up and he's like, something's happening to him. He's like, what the fuck?
And he's pouring
like,
smoke.
Wait a minute.
Just a little nibble like and sickness and then that's it. We see the sun literally burning him up and he can't figure out why. It's definitely different than what we've seen in other vampire movies where it's just an immediate, like, infection.
Yeah. It's more like a virus just taking over kind of thing.
Yeah. And so he attempts to go back to his family and live normally, but is...
He almost makes it.
Burning alive. Almost gets back. And then the RV.
Yeah, didn't the RV drive by? Didn't they, like, go... Was it happenstance? Did they just drive by him or did they go look for him?
Because
they were looking for him. For her.
Yeah. They didn't want him out there knowing what.
And then they saw him, and she must have spilled that he knew.
Hey, I turned a guy, and he's going back to his family.
She didn't tell them that he had turned until they were in the RV. They just
found out
that
she was out messing around with
the guy. They're like, well, if you didn't kill him, he knows. So they were going to go get him and kill him, and she's like, you can't. He's turned.
Yeah.
Because then they were pissed.
And they got pretty mad.
Like, what the?
Because, you got to think, here's this group of five people. That's been a really tight-knit core helping each other survive and feed.
Being very inconspicuous about it, you know, for the most part.
Probably passed on the rules and been very selective in who they turn. Otherwise, there'd be 50 of them, but there's five still after all this time. And he or she, as the brand newest one, has just gone and turned some podunk cowboy.
Yeah, they're like, nobody. No.
There's a scene right there right now with old Tim showing up.
Yep. Tim Thomerson. Look at that guy.
He takes number one spot over the dude with the mustache.
Whoa.
Well, wait, Tom Atkins?
First off, what are you talking about? Straight we say dude with a mustache, because that could be...
You knew who I was talking about, didn't you, though?
But I did.
No. What do we call poor man's Tom Atkins? Who was
that's because you
know. The guy from Prince of Darkness.
Oh, that's right. Really Prince of Darkness?
Yeah, it was the guy that was in the...
Oh, yeah.
Simon and Simon.
But, dude with the mustache, that could be... Tom Selleck. I mean, that could be a good number. True. Charlie Chapman.
But it wasn't. But you knew. Yeah. So in your heart, you know that what I'm saying is gospel.
Yeah.
Tom Atkins is the man.
No, Tim Thomerson does not take top billing.
That's like talking shit about Linnaeus Quigley to these guys.
We love you, Mr. Atkins.
This is true.
Yeah, Tom Atkins is like horror royalty is what he is.
That's very true.
Is what he is.
The fog.
So that's how Caleb gets involved in this group. And then the rest of the film pretty much stems completely off of that meeting and that chance turning and the fact that these vampires don't want him.
Yeah. And him being slightly interested in the fact, but also repulsed, because at one point he tries to go back home.
Yeah.
And he can't. Mm-hmm. A bus ride or something like that. He starts feeling really sick. And mysteriously, May shows up. And this is where I think this is the first time I've ever saw this version of vampirism.
Okay.
Where it's like, in order for you to continue the process and not, die or not get sick or not wither away, she bites her wrist or cuts her wrist and actually feeds
Well, because he's starving to death and he doesn't understand.
Just, yeah, what she's full of food because she's full of blood. Right, so it's like she just transfer shares
system. I was like, wow, that is fucking. I've never seen something like that before. And of course, then you see it going forward.
Well, and that kind of becomes the plot device here. So you've got this group of vampires that kills people to survive, and we see them do that throughout the movie in a number of different ways, some more subtle than others. And you've got this new guy, Caleb, who's being turned, and he's just there for May, but he doesn't want to kill anybody. So every time someone pushes him in that direction and says, you got to kill to survive,
and you have to feed. And that's the whole thing. They're like, you have to prove that you can be part of this group and you can kill.
Yep. And he wants that's
the opposite of what he wants to do with it. Yeah.
And May enables him. So she keeps killing for him and then just literally slicing a vein and feeding her or feeding him leftovers, I guess you'd say. Yeah. She's like that mama bird. Yeah, the vampires aren't going to have that for very long. So they give him a short amount of time to make his first kill.
Yeah, because they're like, all right, man, you know, look, one or two things are going to happen. The solution is to kill you or you, because we can't have you continue to leech off May, or you kill and you then are able to provide for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a part of the movie right here is that struggle of him, you know, clinging on to his humanity, but being somewhat infatuated by this girl and this idea of mortality, but yet the horrific price that comes with it.
Yeah. And I thought it was cool that we got to see how each one of them hunted and that they didn't hunt as like a pack or like a group because,
they go off on their own.
You know, you watch like a 30 Days a Night, which I think is a rad vampire movie because it brought the monster back into vampire for me in a huge way. You know, you kind of needed something of that scenario to have a pack of vampires of that size. They had to be able to take over a whole town and kill everybody and not be discovered doing it. So it happens in Alaska during the dark months, blah, blah, blah. You couldn't just have a group of vampires traveling around the country just murderizing, you know, 5-10 people at a time all the time. So it was neat seeing them hunt and seeing Bill Paxton put on his, like, best Western fineries and go out and try to pick up honky-tonk chicks.
Yep.
And it was fun seeing, you know, Jesse and Diamondback go off in their car and, you know, just pick up hitchhikers kind of thing. So,
or almost get carjacked and murdered. And then they're like, okay.
So it was cool seeing that each one of them went off on their own and had their own way of selecting a person and a, you know, a dinner basically, and how they would get away with it versus just, you know, an RV.
Yeah. But they also did still have that kind of pack mentality when, like, if anybody needed help cleaning up.
Yeah.
So, like, when stupid, dumbass little kid brought back the little sister.
Yeah.
The rest of the group goes, they're like, oh, what room are you in? Mm-hmm. And the rest of the group goes to clean up his mess because he was being impulsive. And they're like, they realize dipshit didn't cover his tracks.
Yeah.
So they still have that pack mentality in, when it comes to preservation of the group.
We, of course, get to the scene that we've talked about and that we just saw a little while ago, which is them arriving at this bar, and it's kind of a cowboy biker bar, and all six of them now at this point go in there with the sole purpose of they're going to eat everybody in there.
Yeah.
And part of me has always wondered when I watched this film, like, why were they so reckless in that one time? Why would they go and just take out this whole crew of people and basically leave a, you know, they burn the bar at the end, but why would they leave this smoldering pile of people that have been all chopped up and stabbed and shot and such. And I think that also goes back to Caleb being unable to make a kill in all of the, like, finesse ways they try to do it, where they try to, you know, provide him a victim here and there, and he's just not going for it.
That was their way of hazing.
Yeah, I think they just kind of thought, we're going to go in here.
Exactly.
We're going to murderize everybody. He's going to see us all do it. And then he's going to know that no one's going to be allowed to leave. He actually
goes to,
you
know, get the one. And
yeah, the only time he's willing to do it is when...
when his chim's
there. The honky-tonk boy is dancing with his girl.
Yeah.
What I loved about that bar scene is that Paxton, they take him in there basically to teach him how to kill or see the brutality of it. But Paxton takes his character and he's like, yeah, my buddy here wants, and goes up to that thug and he says, my buddy wants to buy you a drink. And then he drinks it himself or whatever. And he basically forces this biker dude to beat the shit out of Caleb.
Yeah.
at the beginning, which I think is like, you know,
which is what the so fuck? It, well, it's so his character to A, like you said earlier, just cause that chaos. Mm-hmm. But also, I think they wanted to root out any fear that Caleb might have of, well, if I go try to get that guy, he might get me instead.
Yeah.
So they needed to show him, like, you can take a beating now. You can take some abuse, yeah. And you're going to keep ticking.
And you can deliver abuse.
My favorite
abuse.
Thing ever, though, yeah. Was he punched the guy, launches him onto the pool table, and he's like, did I do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And all the kills that happen in that bar shit. Are so awesome and so on point to the characters as written. And that shows yeah. Where Catherine Bigelow really sat down and paid super attention to the characters she had come up with and how they would behave. Because, you know, May goes over there and seduces one guy. Even though the guy's just seen other people get killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She still has those charms to turn on that make this guy kind of forget for a second. Like, oh, well, okay, like, this well, is
maybe
better.
Maybe she's not the bad one.
Yeah, exactly. And Lance Henriksen and Diamondback do theirs just very matter-of-factly. There's no brutality. There's no toying. They're not, like, playing with a dead mouse.
Slit your throat.
Yeah, that's exactly what Bill Paxton's character is. A vampiric kitty cat playing yeah. with a fucking mouse.
He plays with his food first, oh, yeah, and, yeah, he and then he does that. Yeah. So he's dancing on the bar.
He needs to be entertained is what he needs to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, he's breaking pool. I mean, he's doing all that stuff that's just so over the top. Doesn't need to happen. It's not part of the feeding process.
He wants the theatrics. That's what he wants.
And then he has probably what's one of my favorite kills in this,
yeah.
Which I don't want to ruin right yeah. now, but it happens in this scene and it's super awesome.
Well, you okay, then I'll keep you from having to do that because you had mentioned earlier about how the shenanigans of the movie itself carried over into offset and yes. off-scene stuff. Fucking Bill Paxton in full makeup. At one point he gets horribly burned.
Yeah, like half his face is almost right. gone.
He's just a mm-hmm. nightmare, which is super cool, by the way, side note, or diatribe, whatever. You really don't have any idea what the movie is about when you see the artwork cover. You have no idea it's a vampire movie. It's Bill Paxton. His yeah. face is all fucked up on side. You're like, oh, is this a zombie movie?
He's been shot a bunch of times, so mm-hmm. light is going through holes that are in him.
But in full makeup, apparently the crew had to deal with a train going by. And so one day in full makeup, he goes up to the crew of the train and he's like, yeah, there's been a horrible accident. And they're all freaking out. And he says, yeah, but you know, you should see how the other guy looks. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just fucking with yeah. normal people offset.
And I guess he and Lance Henriksen were doing that sort of thing pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Where they would go off in character and continue to kind of be in character. And Bill Paxton even calls Lance Henriksen out a couple times saying he went too far. And one of those cases was they were cruising down the road in full vampire makeup as their characters and going like 80 miles an hour, Lance Henriksen says, and they get pulled over by a cop. And the cop walks up to the window and it's like, you know, let me see your ID and everything. And Lance Henriksen says as he handed over that ID, and he's still got those crazy fingernails that he's wearing, which this is a whole other story we can get into. But he's got these really crazy vampire fingernails. And he hands over his license and he says that he was looking at that cop as though he was just lusting to eat him in like the most just ravenous kind of predator prey way that he could possibly look at the cop. And he said at one point, just from looking at him with that intensity, the cop took a half step back and put his hand on his gun. And Bill Paxton's in the passenger seat, of course, just saying to him, like, stop it, Lance, stop it. You're going too far. Lance, you're going too far. And the cop eventually just hands the license back and goes his merry way because he doesn't even know how to deal with whatever was happening
crazy
in that car.
Crazy dude who wants to nibble on him.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Can you imagine how things could have turned?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But going back to those nails, Lance Henriksen got so into this role. Like, I never really realized. You hear that word or the words character actor thrown out right. a lot, and you know, people that
like,
just immerse themselves.
With the Joker and Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm. You know. Where they just kind of become that character. And I had no idea that he subscribed to that mentality so much. And I don't know if he has actually on a film other than this one to the same level, because Lance Henriksen says this is his favorite film he's ever made. But he actually went to a place in LA and had those nails made for him. That wasn't part of the production. Mm. That wasn't a mm-hmm. design choice. Just because he thought it looked horrible and heinous and he wanted it to look like his bones had extended through his fingertips into claws and things. But he also developed a backstory for his character.
Right.
Which is like off the rails. It's
Yeah, I understand he did a lot of research in like some of the Civil War.
Yeah, and different vessels that traveled up and down the, you know, the different rivers. And he came up with this idea that his character was on a cannonball-ravaged ship.
Yeah,
and
Confederate Navy there, or something, yeah, wasn't it?
And was laying there dying. And that this ship of just bloody corpses and dying soldiers is flowing down the river. And that he looks up in a harpy was floating above him with wings out, and she takes pity on him and turns him into a vampire so he can continue living and all this. And
he got into the character, like you say, yeah, method acting, because he actually apparently took tar from historical times, tar, and put it in his hair, black tar, because that's what seamen did in – and when I say seamen, I mean the type on a boat that are actually people, one, settle down. And – and because apparently that's what they did. They put black tar in their hair.
Yeah, so he did that to dye his hair black.
Yeah, crazy.
Tar in the hair.
I mean, I suppose if you're somebody that you're an actor and you're, I don't know, yeah, I suppose you love the genre so much that you dive into it. Not much different for than sure. kind of what we do with
I guess he took the Confederate flag and sewed it into his own trench coat. That wasn't a costuming decision. So, yeah, I mean, this guy really went wild. Yes, I would love some more, please. Sorry, this clown shoes is just so good.
I saw you grab the empty bottle and it was sad.
I did.
That was sad.
I think that plays on the screen. And I think that's what makes this.
Here's what's sad about the whole thing. This film by Kathryn Bigelow was a triumph. Absolutely a triumph. But not until it reached cult status, because it didn't do very well.
No. And a lot of people blame that poster you talked about, because it didn't really say vampire movie. Some people say that there just shouldn't have been two vampire movies released in the same year
and competed with Lost Boys.
And, you know, again, Lost Boys had Warner Brothers behind it. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, without going all the way through the end of our film, Caleb eventually kind of becomes the hero of this group, because after they take out this bar, law enforcement gets involved because he fails to kill his victim again. And so that guy, of course, goes and tells, well, this group of people just killed this whole bar. And law enforcement tracks them down, and he winds up being the one to save them in that particular scenario. And I love the way at the exact moment they make him the hero of this family, and they finally accept him, and they're like, you're all right. And Bill Paxton gives him a spur, for crying out loud, one of his spurs.
When they get to the other hotel.
Yep.
Yep.
And right when that happens, they bring back Caleb's family, and we find out that his dad and his sister, you know, have been tracking him down and are now here where he is.
Stupid little kid.
And he has decisions to be made.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the ultimate, I guess, consequence of this whole thing is that.
That's the true test. Are you in or are you out?
Yeah. And, and again, I don't think we need to go all the way down from there. They wrap this film in a certain way, which, besides the acting of that little turd, what is his name even? Homer.
Homer.
If you're not a Greek philosopher,
hey, that's
not been named Homer.
That was a common name back in the,
like,
you know,
fat cartoon.
Oh no, character. But he's a Greek philosopher though. Things come out of Homer Simpson's mouth.
Oh, you're damn right, dude.
Geniosity.
Oh yeah.
So if you're not a genius philosopher like Homer of ancient times or Homer Simpson, you should not be named Homer.
It's fitting for the character, him being the oldest of the pack.
It would be fitting if that was the character he was portraying, but he just did such a bad job.
Right.
I wish they had tightened down on that. But besides that fact, the only other thing that left me scratching my head a little bit was the wrap of this film. It wraps very tidily and a little bit happy for me, and I would have been A-okay to see Near Dark end as a little bit more of a tragedy.
It needed to be a little more dark and twisty in the end.
Yeah, or at least just wrap without a bow. Like, end without everything, so...
It didn't need to be quite that warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. And again,
it's funny you should be talking about that
go into this
right now, because that's exactly the scene that's playing in the background.
Yeah, and about 5 minutes from here
is
where I was like,
they just showed a scene where Lance Hendricks takes a knife in the mouth right down his throat.
Oh, Lance Hendrickson.
And it's...
Yeah.
What did I call him?
There's no...
Lance Hendrickson.
Yeah. God damn it. Yeah. Sorry, Lance.
Yeah. If you're listening.
Lance,
we apologize.
I know you are.
And why don't you come on the show and set
But he fucking rips that knife out of his throat, and he just kind of spits a whole shitload of blood out and then carries on.
Oh, he's such a badass in this.
It's so cool.
A tremendous badass.
When he spits out the bullet, too. This is hilarious.
Yeah.
He gets shot and he spits the bullet out and puts it in the guy's pocket.
Yeah. I love when Tim Thomerson, Caleb's dad, says that to him, like, them people ain't normal.
you don't spit
a bullet out when you shoot them.
They have an interesting twist on here, too, about how to cure Caleb, which I'm not going to get
that's
into.
That's the part I don't like.
But
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you and Grace are just like,
that's just weird. Yeah. That's the ultimate wrap-up, is that they do offer a cure in this film.
Okay, that's what I thought you were talking about.
While it goes in with what they set up with the whole, like, a little nick can give you vampirism, mm-hmm. then this should be able to fix it. So, I mean, that kind of makes some sense, honestly.
But it's some bullshit.
Yeah, well, is it not just well, that it's okay, so hold on. I would have liked to have seen the cure presented and then maybe not used.
Is it bullshit now?
I would have liked to have seen the cure presented but maybe not used on those it is used on.
Yeah.
You know, I would have liked to
the
have seen
the ending was a little too happily ever after.
Yeah, exactly. That being said, though, when this film ends, I have no disappointments and I'm super stoked to watch it again because it's absolutely great.
Yeah, but
here's the fascinating thing about rewatching movies that we watched the first time back in, you know, 87 is – we have that opinion now.
Oh, Homer's about to catch on fire and explode.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, there's awful CG in front of the smoke.
Get him.
Yeah. So let's talk about that smoke.
Well, hold on real quick. Do you think we would have the same opinions about the ending now? Because we've had so much years and years and years and years of these kind of movies and stupid endings and
stuff
like that.
It's a flaming Homer, dude.
Or back in 1987.
Yeah.
Oh, that is.
Who needs a flaming Homer, dude?
We need a flaming Homer, dude.
Yes. But in 1987, was this acceptable? Do we remember that far back where we're like, I'm not so offended by the way they tried to cure it?
Well, and I guess that's funny because I've been watching Near Dark about once a year, you know, because Halloween season runs around. I always put it on my rotation, so I've probably seen it 20 times. And really, I think it's only the last two times.
They're talking about Louisian right
now.
And
I was like, I don't think I like the ending of this.
Yeah, interesting.
So,
because our audiences have become more sophisticated.
Because I'm watching it now. Yeah.
Writing, TV. I mean, my God, TV shows.
Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Are more in complex and in depth than most movies nowadays.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
Great writing.
Well, and we're used to, because of those kind of television series, I think we are now used to finding people that we really root for and we cheer for and we love and we bring into our homes because we buy shirts with them and we buy, you know, cups that have their sayings on it, and then they die. Mm. And the show keeps going. And we just have to deal. And we do deal. And we keep watching the show. So I think that has
I didn't know we were going to talk about Star Wars on this episode.
I thought you were talking about Star Wars. I was actually thinking more along the lines of like a Game of Thrones or a Walking Dead or things like that that have a huge fan base that really adores its characters. And then those characters get murderized.
I'm sure it happened before this, but wasn't Lost one of like the big pivotal shows that did that?
Let's not even talk about Charlie.
Yeah. Poor Charlie.
That would be my moment. That what? Juan was talking about with Terminator 2.
That's your jumping the shark moment? Or
well, no, my tear up moment.
Oh, yeah.
For what?
When
Charlie,
Lost.
When Charlie went down.
Oh, I've never seen Lost.
So. Charlie dies in Lost. If you haven't seen Lost, you're probably not going to watch it now. And Charlie dies in like season, I don't know, 4 or something like that.
Yeah.
That and when Gandalf falls into Shadow and Flame. And I know we've talked to this exact conversation on this show before, but I stand by that. I will tear up every time Gandalf.
When the two towers opened.
Okay.
The first, I don't know what it was, 10 minutes, 5 minutes maybe, when they showed what continued on when Gandalf and the Balrog fell.
Yes.
And that whole scene, right down to the completion of it, I was
Grace
like...
Grace left the room for a moment. She's
like, she was like, what the fuck are we talking about? Yeah. This is a horror podcast, you dumb nuts. That's a word Grace would use, too.
Dumb nuts.
Right. Dumb nuts.
Yeah.
No?
That's not much.
It has something to do with nuts, though. You always have to...
I've called you dick nuts before.
Dick nuts, dick dumb nuts, skulls.
Yeah. Idiot sticks.
Yeah.
I have a lot of things, but dumb nuts, that's not one of my...
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
You know, you... It has a Grace vernacularness to it.
It kind of does.
But anyway, that 5 minutes,
yeah.
I could have walked away. I was 100% satisfied with the movie at that point. I didn't need to see anymore. The rest of it was amazing, too.
All I could think of that entire time, that whole scene, and they're fighting, and he's slashing with the sword, and the Balrog's trying to claw him, trying to get him with the tail, that whole scene, all I could think of was, this is a super fucking deep hole. Well, that's literally that's all I could think of. I know I should have been, like, into the moment and, like, oh, this is the revelation. I mean, I've read the book, so I know.
Honey, I don't think there's something you're telling me.
I'm just telling you, that's all I could think about was...
Yeah,
I don't know if I can suspend my belief enough.
No, it went.
I believe a Balrog.
Whole different level
and
dimension. And
this ancient angel wizard. But that's a really deep hole. I don't know if I buy that.
It was incredible.
How did we get from Near Dark to this?
I'll tell you one thing.
Baby steps.
They were killers. What?
No, they were not baby steps. I wasn't gone long.
See what?
Dedication and focus.
Kill off Doctor Who, and I'll watch that episode over and over and over again.
Okay, good, because they kill off Doctor Who.
I think they've killed him like four good. I want the final episode.
Yeah, it might be this season, because he only has 13 regenerations, and he's now in his 13th regeneration, which, as I predicted 3 years ago, it was going to be a woman. Spoiler alert.
What? Doctor Who's a woman now?
Mm-hmm. What?
Maybe I'll watch it.
Yep.
Just kidding. I won't.
Anyway, I don't know how we got on this, but...
I don't know. Let's go back to Near Dark. Here's Near Dark. Ranked number 34 on Rotten Tomatoes' top 50 horror movies. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Lost Boys. Although they're probably like a couple higher. I didn't look.
Dude, you love Lost Boys.
I love it. Absolutely.
Saxophone guy. You love Saxophone guy.
Here's the thing with Lost Boys. If you gave me Near Dark and Lost Boys... Mm-hmm. But you gave Lost Boys the Tangerine Dream soundtrack from Near Dark. I would like Near Dark 100 times better. Lost Boys gets me with the music, man. It's those jams.
You still believe, dude.
Time period. Yeah. I still believe. Yeah. And people are strange. And I get really into Lost Boys because of the 80s nostalgia of it. But as a vampire flick, Near Dark is far superior. Mm-hmm. I like Lost Boys a ton. But as a vampire flick. And here's a fun fact. They were going to do a remake of Near Dark in 2006, but it was canceled because Twilight was all the rage amongst old ladies and little kids or whoever watches that.
Exactly the time to do a remake.
And emos. Right.
And they said, well, that's already about the love story between like a human and a vampire, which is not when Near Dark is
really. Yeah, but Near Dark is way less sparkly and dumb.
Exactly. But if I have ever given Twilight props for anything, which I haven't, I will give it props for saving us from a remake of Near Dark.
Yeah. No, that's I agree.
Because they would have ruined this.
Oh, absolutely. They would have made it flashy. They would have made it Hollywood. They wouldn't have had genre greats.
No.
It would have been all fresh-faced, slutty, and hunky.
They would have found some other really annoying kid that I wanted to stab.
Let's take the remake of Total Recall, for instance. Yeah, perfect example.
I haven't
example.
Watched that
yeah.
because I choose not to.
Yeah, Total, it got yeah. really slick yeah. and fancy and shiny and. Mm.
But what about something the remake about of Evil Dead? You got to give that one credit.
That's okay, is, but that's because
that is a good remake.
That's
that
because it was remade by the creators. It was
yeah,
remade
but
by
there's so
Raimi
many remakes that are such bullshit, man. Garbage, Nightmare. No,
nope.
Get
Halloween.
Out.
Not
no.
a remake. Oh, Halloween.
Did
no.
I say that on the
what?
Podcast on the horror podcast? The Halloween remakes.
Oh, they're terrible.
Fucking garbage.
They're not as bad as the Nightmare remake, though.
And the threat of a
no,
remake
they're not.
Of...
That might be the worst horror remake I've ever seen next to Black
even,
Christmas.
Even the Friday the 13th
remake. Nightmare on Elm Street remake. Oh, yeah,
even the Friday the 13th remake horrible. Is better than Nightmare remake.
I enjoyed the Friday the 13th remake. I thought that That's they so did bad. A good job in blending three different films into one. And I thought they did a great job in nodding to all the things that fans expected them to nod to. And because Friday the 13th films were already pretty kids, slutty girls.
Lots of boobs.
It worked.
Yeah, and
the
very
remake
little else.
Amps it up on the boobage, by
it,
the way.
It passed. It passed all muster in that way. But I think films that have more than that get it made into that.
Well, and the thing is I think Near Dark remake would have sucked for the same reasons that Nightmare on Elm Street remake sucked. When you have such an intense, amazing character... like Robert Englund in Nightmare on Elm Street. And you don't yeah. use that character, you try to put someone else to fill that in, well, you lose it.
You don't
if somebody
use...
tried to remake Near Dark and somebody else tried to do the shit that Bill Paxton's doing,
yeah.
no.
You don't
no,
use
no, no.
Rorschach from Watchmen as Freddy Krueger. You
yeah,
don't.
No.
I'm sorry. That was...
Well, and he even but might have been lose... able to be a decent Freddy if he wasn't trying so goddamn hard to be a decent Freddy.
No, he needed to... Yeah, he needed to create his own Freddy.
Yeah.
He was trying to be Englund, and no one can be Englund.
And whoever wrote his one-liners... I mean, first off, Freddy's one-liners were goddamn terrible and awesome because
Watch your
of
mouth.
It. this guy's one-liners were bad.
Were just bad.
And a little creepy.
Well, he didn't say him. He had sort of that monotone or that voice he did
the
same
voice.
Whole time. He used that voice saying them too. Whereas Freddie, at least he could change up his voice a little bit.
Englunds
you know,
were
and,
supposed
and
to
be a little happier. He'd laugh and
well,
do whatever,
that's
you
the,
know.
That's the... Robert will give you a tip of the eye through the little glance as he pulls his shades down.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
They can't do that if they're making that movie serious, so they just shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. But I feel like that would have happened to this.
Plus, there's a reason they
you
took
would lose
the child
the quirky
rape
characters.
Out of the original Nightmare on Elm Streets and made it child murder. It didn't need to be put back in.
Yeah.
And it didn't need to be put back in heavy.
Yeah.
The remake got very
And that made this
rapey.
Remake extremely uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
There's just no need for it.
No, there are certain 80s films that I think should be remade.
If you say The Fog, you're going
to
get punched.
No. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. I'm trying to remember which movies I had mentioned, because they had a great idea, but they didn't have the backing, or they didn't have the technology, or they didn't have the skill set and the practical effects. And there's some movies that I think should be remade or re-realized by the original director.
Or don't go back in and don't go back and revisit your movies and add more effects into them and make them completely shit.
God damn! I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember which ones I was thinking of, but I can't. But for sure, like RoboCop, never needed to be remade.
No, nope.
What an incredible movie! Yeah. So yeah. The Near Dark thing would have been a complete. One would guess a complete failure.
No, I'm pretty positive.
The whole.
I mean, look at Flatliners.
Yeah.
Oh,
why
God,
did you remake that?
They remade Flatliners.
Yes. Oh yeah.
It's not on video now.
The fact that it's a surprise says everything you need to know, because
there was a poster
no
for it in the movie theater.
I
we saw it once in the theater.
Though.
We saw the poster.
The original
we're like,
Flatliners. I like Flatliners.
I have the new Flatliners. It's right over there.
I have not seen
Kevin Bacon.
I can't bring myself to watch it.
I just recently watched.
Does it have Kiefer? No.
An American Werewolf in London. I just recently watched it, and it is amazing. Yeah. It holds up.
Oh
it's
my God,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Of course, the effects
and
are
I hope
amazing.
That John Landis's son, who is really pushing to do a remake of it, doesn't.
Yeah, I don't like this whole like keep it the family thing. Like I don't give a shit about George Romero's kid. I don't give two shits.
Exactly.
I don't give a crap about Max Brooks, because he's Mel Brooks' kid, writing zombie books that cash in on a craze that are. You know, I mean, it's stuff you'd get off of internet memes, put in a book, and now he's a genius zombie writer. Like, I don't get the whole
just
thing.
Just because your parents were good at life doesn't mean you aren't.
Exactly. So, while we're on the talk of things to come and remakes of horror and things like that, what are we all at this table thinking about the new Halloween that's coming out? So, just been announced. Well, a while ago it was announced that it's throwing away all sequels, including Halloween 2.
Yep.
That was my first like, oh, dang, because I love 1 and 2.
I love
and I
number
see
two.
Them as one
love
film.
Number 2.
I don't know how they can throw away number 2. I've already have.
You just flush it. you just fly down the toilet.
I can't believe I walked right into that.
You're walking into a lot of stuff.
You just take those massive two shits and you just flush them.
Right, dude. Damn right.
Are you kidding me?
Now the massive two shits might clog.
Oh,
they might
that's
clog.
True.
That is,
yeah.
Right? Brilliant formulaic strategy of amazing comedians that start a joke off at the beginning of their show, and at the end they wrap it up. Thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen.
And somehow we have
a massive two shits. Jesus Christ.
But so that, I don't know. What do we think about that?
Jimmy Lee's back in it.
Yeah,
that
I'm
never
intrigued.
Hurts.
And
never
this
hurts.
Is my favorite piece of information.
And John Carpenter
is what's new
involved with it.
In he's involved in it, and he's also
doing the soundtrack.
Co-doing the soundtrack again. Yep. But here's the new thing: is that Dick Warlock.
Oh,
so one of our original.
I have
autographed. Four total people wore the suit in the first one, but he of course
I have his
was
autographed on my DVD copy.
Yes, we do. He is Michael.
That's cool.
That's what's being tossed about now. And I think that's pretty rad that the original Michael gets
I'm
to be Michael.
I'm more
again.
Excited for this one than I've been for a remake in a long time. But I still have reservations.
The nice thing is it's not a remake per se, as it's a continuation
of the
story.
Yeah.
What are you going to call it? Reboot, reimagining,
whatever.
Prequel, series. It's all the same. It's taking something that exists and is awesome and trying to cash in on it. So I get that. But
see, I'm a fan of it only because I so desperately want what they teased at here last year, I forget the guy's name, who was going to do basically an Aliens 3. And he was going to eliminate everything in between from 2 to now.
And the concept art looks freaking amazing.
Yes. Newt's still alive. Sigourney's in it.
What do you have against Aliens 2?
Hicks, Sigourney. God damn it.
Sigourney?
Well, when you're crashing with the undead man.
You're not even that drunk.
What do you have against... Aliens.
Nothing. No. I said from number 2.
Oh,
I thought you said
including number 2.
It gets number 3 out, number 4, number. And it says Hicks is still alive. And
what about Vasquez? What about Vasquez, dude?
Well, no, Vasquez bites it in number two.
Yeah, she gets murderized.
That's the only
aliens. I always aliens said three times.
You have? Is that like geniosity?
I guess it is. I just make up words.
That guy's a murderizer.
His murderification.
His murderification.
Dang. Yeah. So if I can get behind something like that, yeah, wipe out the entire stories in between, then yeah, I think I originally kind of have a problem with like wipe getting rid of what they've already done. Toilet. Yeah. It's like, no, you should stick by your, you know, guns and just, you know, own your work.
Yeah.
But
this is what I want to see. I want to see in this new Halloween, Michael Myers defeated.
Finally.
Right? Mm-hmm. While watching TV on a Halloween special by a bunch of druids. And his head gets mushed.
You know he's going to watch?
Worms come out.
You know he's going to watch?
Coming from?
That's Halloween 3.
You know what he's going to watch on TV?
This will be the ultimate
Charlie Brown.
And we can go straight from Halloween. He's
going to be watching the Charlie Brown special.
Well, then his head will definitely turn to worms. Let's talk about remakes for one more second, because I got to tell you, one of my favorite remakes, and I haven't even had the original, is Undead Party Crasher. It's just such a good beer. I feel like I have to come back to it, because I don't think we really sang its praises enough.
It's not a remake. It's a reimagining, dude.
A reimagining, that's right.
Yes.
It's been rebranded.
It's been rebranded.
I don't know, though. I can taste that holy water in there. I think that's
and you're not burning, which surprises me.
He's burning on the inside.
Yeah.
He's smoldering a little bit.
Burning on the inside.
Are you going to explode like Homer?
It's possible.
Are you going to burn and blow up?
It's entirely possible. What are you looking at?
Oh, I'm just looking at your shirt. On the side of it, it says "No longer human," which was similar to a line Lance Hendrick's son says as Bishop.
He said Drick's son again.
Hendrick.
Oh my goodness!
The fuck is it?
Well, before it's Lance Henriksen.
Henrik.
Yeah, no D.
You said Hendrick. Well, the first time you said Lance Hendricks. That's why I was like, Hendricks.
I know. Fuck
the
you.
Veins. The brother of Jimmy Hendrickson.
Henriksen.
But he has a thing on the side of his shirt that says "No longer human," which just totally reminded me of Bishop's.
He's more line, human than human, I'll tell
which
you
was
much.
Not bad for a human.
So we're now plugging,
and he does a book called "Not Bad for a Human." Lance,
who's this?
Oh, that's cool.
Lance Henriksen wrote a book, a biography, I think, called "Not Bad for a Human."
I haven't seen that or heard of
super
that.
Super cool.
I want to look that up. My shirt is a No Longer Human Lance shirt. Henriksen. No Longer Human is one of my favorite bands, and they are a local industrial band here to the Portland area, although he moved to Cali for a while and he's back. They're absolutely fantastic, and if you like industrial or hard, aggressive electronic stuff at all, check out No Longer Human. There you go.
Fits the near dark.
You got a plug.
Movie style too.
Yes, this is Thought Crime shirt with their trademark cockroach on there. Huge fan.
I thought that was like a blood spatter.
That's what I thought too.
It's an upside down cockroach.
It's a cucaracha in my people's language.
Well, as we exit this podcast, should I bring out my honorable mention beer, which is
I think we should
Lagunitas. See, I could pronounce Lagunitas.
Lagunitas.
What the hell?
Oh man. Now we're going to have a speech coach coming in.
We might. Go get your Lagunitas there. I'm going to go get my Lagunitas.
Get your
How about I go get the Lagunitas?
Oh, fine. If you got to, butcher it.
Lagunitas. Dude.
I thought it would be nice to end the podcast with Nighttime, which its title is Fear the Dark.
Oh, yeah. I have a movie all planned for that beer, actually.
Do you? Okay. I do. Well, good. This will just sort of titillate.
Yes.
He's a tit.
Or, this is the problem with guest beers, is that it uses all the beers that we have plans for later.
No. I'm bringing What Rough Beast back in at some time, motherfuckers.
My. It's a good beer.
How can you lambast me for not liking IPAs, and then when I find
because
one I
you
love,
have
you...
have a giant boner for the one beer.
That's right.
Beer.
We're bringing our second bottle.
He has a giant boner. Well, not so much. For Pallet Jack.
Because it's the best IPA.
Yeah, but it's not the best bottle.
Well, we're going to bring our bonus bottle of that Guinness we had last time.
I love
that
this. Oh, by the way.
Yeah. I'm just jokingly. Sorry.
God damn it.
It's the Sinople Cube.
How could you do this
to me? We were going
to
do the reveal, but...
Give me your glass.
I'm giving you my glass.
Oops, I poured it on his yeah.
So the facehugger fingers just spilled beer all over the table.
Because it, like...
It doesn't fucking...
Hilarious. The knuckles were now, just like a random...
Speaking of the knuckles on this...
Yes. Knuckles.
Can you find the magic spot, guys?
I was about to say... Yeah. Looking at this mug from this angle...
Oh,
those
my.
Facehugger
parts.
Legs, knuckles, claws were there.
Yeah, it looks a little lady part.
You know what? I think this is the angle from which we have to take the mugshot.
So, like the wine.
We might
the
have
the wine picture at a World Market.
Not quite as bad.
Wow, this has an incredibly hoppy smell to it.
So this is Lagunitas. It is a limited release, and the only reason it hasn't been on our show as of yet is because it comes out every, I think, September.
Yeah.
Langobedes. And I didn't want to recommend a beer that no one could go find. Yeah, so we'll probably come around to this one here later this fall.
Yeah, which is the only why I brought it in, as like a let's wrap it up kind of beer, because it is a limited release. And, but it's amazing. A really good beer. Mm. So...
Wait, that's good.
Go try it while you can, guys, and then you know, come back and listen to how we rave about it later.
2%. Can't believe it, actually.
One of these days I'm going to bring a beer that surprises both of you.
Should we just...
It's my goal. To find a movie that you haven't seen and a beer that you haven't fondled and tasted and mouthed and whatever it is you do to beers.
Yeah, I don't know if you could find that for either one of us.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
So that's my personal... Yeah, that's my personal goal.
There's a lot of beer in my mouth.
Yeah.
Should run the contest.
I think we fear her too much to run with that one.
Yeah. My brain was racing. I was going to risk life and limb to get it if I could, but I had nothing.
Mm. Yeah,
well, this is real good.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
All right. Hey, speaking of challenges, so a challenge has been put out to one of our number one listeners, Miss Morgan. To supply
she's very stressed out about this
with
decision.
A film or a beer. So
yeah, I didn't tell her she didn't have to do both. If she
yeah, not both. Two. Yeah, and then we're gonna match one of the other to it, and we will feature it. So she gets the pick on that one. So that challenge has been put out there.
Serbian film. What do they call that? Subliminal suggestion there, Morgan. But that can you imagine trying to find a beer that you can enjoy to that film?
To what movie?
Well, the Serbian.
I think to put Serbian it
film. A Serbian film.
I think to put it to that film, you'd have to find a beer you don't enjoy. I think you'd have to find a beer that you think is gross and ridiculous and overhyped and just
starts
really
with P, ends with really. J.
Really?
Palate Jack does not end with J.
It ends with
words
a K.
Are hard for me. Words are hard.
Words are hard.
This is what happens when you do
the listener
a
that can pick out the total number of errors Lee has made on this episode wins a prize.
Oh, well, now I don't have to do any editing.
Okay, I just want to point out one small thing, guys.
Wait, keep your pants on.
Fuck. Nice. Nice. I must applaud to that. Golf clap. Despite all of my misspoken words and my crazy vernacular, you morons have picked up on everything that I've said. So what does that say?
You can say vernacular, but you can't say like simple names.
Like Linguini. Yeah.
I can also say indefatigably.
But you can't say Lagunitas?
And what is it?
Indefatigably.
Massachusetts
on a silver platter.
That and Murderize apparently are my jam.
That's after Panda Express, dude.
No,
that'd be after.
Okay, you were saying that we threw that challenge out there.
Yeah. We've thrown that challenge out there. We have someone that's going to take us up on that challenge. So
I didn't hear about this.
About that. Surprise!
Surprise!
But I want to put that challenge out there to everybody that's listening. If you've got a film, or you've got a beer, and you want us to get creative and pair something with it and do a review, or if you have both, man, hit us up.
That'd be awesome. Takes a lot of pressure off us.
Does it? I think it puts more pressure on, because if somebody picks something, they either want us to love it or they want us to rag on it. And what if we do the opposite? Oof, so much pressure.
That's what happens when you use your thinkings. You realize that things are difficult.
Don't do that a lot.
That's why I try not to do
that.
Why
we try to avoid that at all costs.
Avoid your thinkings and avoid your feels.
But yeah, let us know if you've got some ideas, or just let us know anything. Let us know that you liked the last episode. Let us know that you hated the last episode. Let us know that, you know, I sound funny and slur my words and Lee gets every name wrong.
I think I have some supporters out there.
But we'd love to hear from you guys. We'd love to have some back and forth with you guys. Keep an eye out for a new Facebook group coming. So there will be some Dread Frightened Brooligans action going on, where we can just be a little looser and it won't just be announcements about the show and things like that. We can actually just share news and information and memes and all that crap that Facebook is good for. And I feel weird even saying Facebook is good for anything.
So it'll be good for you to put that on there instead of blowing up my phone with your
Which is how I normally do it. That's true. Yeah, me and I look at each other because we're like the idiots that can't stop messaging things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I can't wait to see
some of us work during the day.
I try not to.
And when you have 19 messages.
3 days a week.
Aaron and I work at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And we get there even earlier.
That's the hardest part is I wake up at like 3:55, 4 o'clock in the morning usually on the days I work. And I'm wanting to like talk to everybody and shoot them all sorts of fun things and find out on my phone. And I know that everybody is asleep and dreaming.
Yeah.
It's gross. How do we make this?
I like it.
To where we can just talk about beer and horror movies forever, and we don't have to wake up anymore.
He's gonna probably have to start learning some names.
God damn it!
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll work on that,
Lee. This is called beer.
You know, one of the things that goes when you get older, Grace, is your
bowel movements,
your pronunciation skills. Fucking one.
Holy shit. Well, I was just thinking it's hard for someone to use, you know, letters in the modern English alphabet when they were raised on pictographs.
Grunts. Yeah.
Movable type was invented.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most of the words or sounds that came out of me when I was much younger was entirely dependent upon how much bowel movements I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that never quite left me.
Yeah.
Now you work on this.
Well, and you always talk about your pages and pages of notes, but I really wish you'd stop writing all over my walls.
You should see what I've done to your bathroom. I don't know. How did we go down this way?
I don't know.
God damn it.
So there it is. Another episode of Dread Fright and Brew. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will catch you guys next time.
Peace.
Blue, ha, ha, ha.